Next case for argument, United States v. Sarge. Mr. McLeese.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, my name is Richard McLeese and I represent Mr. Sarge on this appeal. Your Honors, I submit that this case raises important issues concerning the proper relationship between, on the one hand, jurisdictional and constitutional rules, and, on the other hand, the constitutional principles that underlie those rules. This case, as Your Honors will recall, is a felon in possession case. It's a felon in possession case that involved a so-called reverse sting operation, meaning that government agents pretended to be the sellers here, and the sole predicate for federal jurisdiction was that in pursuing this reverse sting operation, the government agents, when it came time to select the weapons, the guns that they would provide in this reverse sting, they chose weapons from one metaphorical pile, namely those that had been manufactured out of state.
Well, how many guns are manufactured in Illinois?
I don't know the number, Your Honor, but I do know, and I've cited in the brief, that there are at least three gun manufacturers in Illinois. And I would also...
What kind of guns do they make?
There are, according to their websites, there are certainly handguns, which were the subject here. And I would also point, Your Honor, to the Groves decision, which this court decided in 2006, in which the court held that the evidence was legally insufficient to establish after a trial the interstate commerce element of the offense because the government's expert in that case had not foreclosed the reasonable likelihood that the gun had been manufactured in Indiana.
Well, what's your proposition that this is entrapment and that they would have carefully bought a local gun?
No, Your Honor,
it's not
my position that this is entrapment, and I submit, Judge...
Well, it's not entrapment. What's the problem?
The problem, Your Honor, is that to characterize this simply in terms of manufactured jurisdiction...
Look, any sting is a manufacturer. You manufacture a crime, right? And if it's not entrapment, it's perfectly fine to manufacture.
The problem, Your Honor, is that the underlying...
They manufacture, like phony drugs, right? They pretend it's drugs. They're not drugs.
Judge, that points up a very crucial difference between the Controlled Substances Act and this statute. The Controlled Substances Act is based upon an aggregation principle for federal jurisdictional purposes, and therefore it reaches purely intrastate activity. The Supreme Court has repeatedly made clear that in this context, a specific jurisdictional relationship to interstate commerce has to be established in each individual case.
But there's some legitimate interest in presumably regulating the interstate traffic in guns. If there's no reason to think that Sarge would buy a local gun, then they're in effect arranging a crime that he would commit, right? So that there's no entrapment because it's not as if he just buys local guns. So that's why I don't see
that. As if he just buys local guns, but, Your Honor, I think the fairest way of reading the record here is that the place of manufacture is a matter of indifference to him, as it would be to most people who want
a
gun. They want a gun that functions.
Yes, I know, but that's not part of the crime. The crime doesn't require that you desire to import guns. It just requires that you be using a gun from out of state.
I understand, Your Honor, but the purpose, the function...
That's the law if he does that, no matter how indifferent he is. And the government, without committing entrapment, is allowed to arrange the kind of crime that the defendant would have committed on his own, but in circumstances where it would be harder to catch him.
Your Honor, in this context, I submit that to say that the government, purely as a matter of their discretion, can federalize what would otherwise be a local...
What's wrong with that?
I submit, Judge, that it is divorcing it from the underlying constitutional principles recognized in the Lopez
case,
But, Judge, not any entrapment case has been the subject of repeated Supreme Court decisions.
What difference does it make?
The difference that it makes, Judge, is for the constitutional principle that the government is a government of limited powers. That presupposes, as the Supreme Court recognized in Lopez, that there are two distinct sets of offenses, those that are within the reach of the federal power and those that are outside of the reach of the federal power.
This is within the reach of the federal power once the government has arranged, right, for the gun to be imported from another state.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Constantly doing that, right?
The problem there is you are allowing the federal law enforcement agent not merely to determine what federal offenses should be the subject of prosecution. You are giving a federal law enforcement agent the power as a matter of unfettered discretion.
How did you catch a kidnapper locally before he crossed state lines, but instead they decide to let him cross state lines, and then they'll arrest him. Then they can prosecute him federally. Is that unconstitutional?
No, Your Honor. Because there in that instance, Your Honor, the individual criminal has decided to commit the act that implicates federal jurisdiction. He has crossed state lines.
He's just fleeing, and they could have stopped him, just the way this guy is indifferent to the source of the gun.
Why are federal agents the proper targets of a Commerce Clause argument in the first place?
Because, Your Honor, it seems to me that if the federal government, you mean as opposed to Congress, is that the question? Yes.
Right.
All right. I just want to make sure I understood the question. The reason, Your Honor, is that it seems to me that if the notion of the government as being a government of limited powers is to have any meaning, that cannot be confined to congressional power, because to say that the Congress, so long as they enact a facially valid statute, you can then have federal agents who enforce it so as to federalize every conceivable gun possession offense, that seems to me to implicate the core constitutional concerns of limitation of power.
What should they have done in this case?
What they should have done, Your Honor, is they should have, as they often do, referred this to local law enforcement authorities, and this should have been proceeded with locally.
They can't do stings in gun cases?
They could do a sting that was done as a matter of a joint investigation, as often happens with federal agencies.
Well, you're saying they'd be prohibited from choosing to supply a gun manufactured out of state, right?
I'm saying that does not satisfy the jurisdictional element of a federal criminal offense for constitutional purposes.
So the agents should be prohibited from doing that, right?
They should, yes.
Now, how does this apply, then, in Indiana, where no guns are manufactured, have not been for many decades? Would you outlaw reverse stings by ATF in Indiana?
Okay, well, as to the factual predicate, and I'll defer to Your Honor, I would note that the Groves case...
I tried many, many felon in possession cases in Indiana, and many experts said no guns in Indiana.
If there are no guns manufactured in Indiana, that's a different case, Your Honor, because in a reverse sting in Indiana.
So it would be okay in that case, you're saying?
Yes, I am. Because there would not be any conceivable purely local gun possession offenses in Indiana.
Well, there are plenty of local gun offenses in Indiana.
By local, I mean that guns that did not have an interstate commerce component. In Illinois, you can have gun possession that is a possession of a locally made weapon where the individual has no interstate interest at all.
The state offense doesn't have anything to do with where the gun was manufactured or how it traveled.
That's quite right.
There's no state offense that has that as an element in Indiana, Wisconsin,
Illinois,
or any place else.
I must have
gun possession by felons is a crime in most states.
That's right.
Regard to where
that's
the gun
right,
comes
Judge.
From.
And from a constitutional standpoint, it's important to recognize the federal government is one of limited powers. If you accept the proposition that the government can do what they did here, then what you're saying is not merely can the government engage in activity that potentially encroaches on state court, state law, but you can say that they can effectively supplant it. Because if, for example, ATF, being fearful of having their funding cut, thinks, oh, we'll bump up our statistics and thereby get more gun cases and thereby show Congress that we deserve more money. They could put out the word to their informants that, look, anytime you hear of somebody who's interested in a gun, let us know, and if something happens here, you'll be rewarded. They could effectively take over.
They could. They have limited resources because there are, in Indianapolis alone, for example, there are far more felons arrested in possession of firearms than the federal government could afford to prosecute in 5 years.
I understand that, Judge, and what I'm saying is that in a case such as this, it ought not to be left simply to the discretion of an individual federal agent as to whether the federal government has power to prosecute, but rather it should be referred to the state authorities.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McLeese.
Your Honor.
Mr. Dale?
May it please the court, I'm Yusef Dale on behalf of the United States Appellee. Your Honor, respectfully, this court should not entertain the merits of defendant's argument because he did waive them by not preserving them in his conditional plea. But below, he argued that the guns did not satisfy the interstate commerce element because they fell into the possession of the ATF prior to coming into his possession. Here, he's arguing that the purposeful choosing of guns that did, in fact, satisfy the interstate element precludes it makes it unconstitutional as applied to him. So those are different and discrete arguments. And because he did not preserve that argument below, this court should not entertain the elements. This court should not entertain the merits. If this court should decide to entertain the merits of defendant's argument, the court should rule in the government's favor because the executive branch here, the ATF, did what's long been recognized as constitutional, and that is that they simply engaged in an undercover sting to capture the criminal conduct of an individual who expressed a desire to commit that crime. And as such, we feel like this court should rule in the government's favor and affirm the district.
Do you think the executive branch is the proper subject of a Commerce Clause claim?
No. I think the legislative branch, it's the Commerce Clause, per the Constitution, is delegated to the legislature. The legislature says what the law is, and they and the legislative branch controls the commerce or commerce clauses. Commerce authority is delegated to the legislative branch.
So there's no such thing as an as-applied Commerce Clause claim?
There is a such thing as an as-applied. No, yes, I mean, there is a such thing as a Commerce Clause as-applied challenge. I would say that it's just that
see where I'm going with this?
Not exactly. I would say that an as-applied constitutional challenge, I don't know. Can Your Honor repeat the question? I don't think that necessarily just because the legislature is responsible for relegating commerce among the several states, that doesn't preclude somebody from having an as-applied challenge. I don't think that follows necessarily. But if there are no more questions, then I'm going to sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Dale, and thank you to Mr. McLeese. You were appointed, were you not? So we thank you for your vigorous efforts on behalf of your client.